Before there was a Starbucks on every corner and a Keurig machine in every office, there was a company started by Francesco Illy in Italy in 1933 called Illy Cafe. Now his grandson runs the family business, which is global in scale. You might know them from their signature red logo on their white cups. They also sell coffee beans, espresso machines, and more. And joining us in today's View from the Top, our series of conversations with leaders, is the chairman of Illy Cafe, Andrea Illy. Thanks for coming into Here and Now.
Hello. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you. And I know that one of the things that you're worried about right now or you're thinking about as the chairman of this company is how climate change is going to affect coffee production.
Well, coffee is definitely affected by climate change in two ways. Particularly the Arabica one, which is the best premium quality, you know. Temperature might be too high for the plantations. And this is one of the problems. And then water security, droughts, or excessive rain, which, you know, favors the proliferation of some diseases that then kill the plants. So this is something we had to work in advance, because there might be up to 50% of the land, which is currently suitable for Arabica production, not being suitable any longer from now to 2050.
Are you already seeing the effects now?
From time to time, I see an acceleration of, let's say, climatic adversities affecting quality and production. I'm extremely confident that there is enough science and technology around to fix the problem. But we will need to adapt the agronomical practices. We will need to develop new cultivars which are resistant to the effects of climate change. And we will also need to migrate the plantations. So all this will take a lot of time. We have already a benchmark of something which has been extremely well done in Colombia. But Colombia did work over the last 25 years in order to adapt to climate change, very successful. And they are now reaching all-time record in production with their new cultivar. But something similar needs to happen in all the other 50 countries producing coffee, which is, you know.
So that's what's going on the supply side. What about the demand side? How is global demand for coffee changing?
Well, coffee is not considered a commodity any longer, thanks to the gourmet coffee revolution over the last two decades. It became extremely popular. Coffee was able to develop the three virtues, which are pleasure, health, and sustainability. Hmm. There is definitely more quality and pleasure in the cups, thanks to preparation technology, better places, more variety, and so on. And consumers are definitely more engaged. Health is now proven that coffee is good for health. There are several, let's say, scientific studies confirming that coffee makes you live better and longer to such an extent that even recently the World Health Organization decided to reclassify coffee as non-carcinogenic, which is a great success. And last but not least, the last virtue is sustainability. Sustainability did improve, particularly the environmental and social one over the last decade. So thanks to this positiveness, coffee is gaining ground, acceptance also from emerging countries like Asia. Asia became the second largest region after Europe in terms of total coffee consumption, bigger than the United States.
Do you see a difference in the reason people drink coffee in different places, that maybe in Europe you're drinking it as a nice, like something that brings you pleasure, and in the U.S. you're drinking it so you can get your work done in the morning?
Well, when coffee used to be just a commodity, quality was so-so, people used to drink coffee for the caffeine kick, particularly in the morning. Today is different. Coffee became an experiential product. People are engaged because they love the flavor. They love the ritual of preparation. And so it's becoming similar as an experience to wine, you know. So this is why consumption are accelerating and also gaining attrition people who were tea drinking before.
You mentioned sustainability. What about these pods that have become so popular? I know that they can be recycled, but probably most people aren't recycling them.
Well, pods are a part of the equation of pleasure because they deliver such an incredible amount of consistency in the preparation, consistent quality in the cup, and convenience in the way to prepare, that they are kind of an habilitating technology, enabling technology in order to get the quality that in the cup that the consumer needs. Yes, the negative aspect is that there is some packaging material, But, you know, the packaging material can be recycled. There are many other food, you know, which I give you an example. Why focus on the capsule, which is so dramatic in terms of consumer benefit, rather than focusing on the fact that the consumer drink coffee in a paper cup, whereas you can drink like we do in Europe, in Italy, in a China cup that can be washed again, you know?
Well, do you see the technology changing with these pods to make them more environmentally friendly than they are today, maybe biodegradable or something like that?
Well, there are two ways to handle the, let's say, environmental impact. You either go biodegradable or you go into recycling. So the paradigm which is becoming predominant worldwide is the paradigm of the so-called circular economy, which means that whichever material is used in whichever product, be it a car, a computer, a TV set, or a coffee capsules, is then brought back in the production after recycling. So I believe more into recycling because typically the biodegradable products are higher in terms of carbon footprint and water footprint. So in a sense, it's better in terms of environmental impact to recycle rather than to do biodegradable.
You have been quoted previously as saying you're against selling fair trade coffee. Why is that?
It's not that I'm against fair trade coffee. I believe that fair trade coffee is a very good step towards sustainability, but it's only the first step. As a matter of fact, fair trade coffee is not sustainable per se, because you kind of distort the value equation by paying more a product which is normally valued less, you know. So pricing is altered in such a way, and the consumer find themselves paying more just for the sake of being good, feeling good. So, you know, this is philanthropy. If you want to be a philanthropist, you give money to NGOs which invest the money in the cause that you want to support. You don't need to buy a coffee bag in order to do so. On the opposite side, if you want to be sustainable, then you have to pay more for better quality. And the better quality will meet a premium price paid by consumer. This is our philosophy, and this is why we direct source, and we did pioneer direct sourcing since 1991, working hand in hand with the coffee growers, selecting only those who are really obsessed about quality. Second step is training them through the University of Coffee, which trains thousands of growers every year. And if their efforts in quality then produces the expected result, which is extremely high quality coffee lot, then we buy directly and we pay a premium price.
But are you saying that any CEO out there who decides they want to pay their workers a living wage is a philanthropist in a way, that there's no reason to do that if the value isn't there?
Well, you know, companies need to be sustainable, definitely, because the reason why a corporation to exist is to do customers and maintain customers. And in order to do so, this need to be a perpetual mission, let's say. So you must be sustainable as a business. But sustainability is not about philanthropy, because philanthropy is more the job of foundations. So if an entrepreneur wants to be philanthropist, then he pulls out part of the profit from the company. And instead of buying a yacht, maybe he puts the money in a foundation. And with the foundation, he does philanthropy.
I want to just ask you a few questions before we let you go. Starting with, how are you feeling the economic situation in Italy, which has been going through some problems, as other European countries have over the last many years?
Well, Italy is coming back gradually, also thanks to a very good work by this government led by Premier Renzi. However, Italy has structural problems. We lost competitiveness over the past decades, and we don't grow enough. We grow around less than 1% now. We have too much public debt and too much unemployment. So Italy desperately needs some reforms in order to be able to quickly accelerate investments and also increase internal consumptions. And these reforms are not facilitated by the current constitution of the country, which is over-democratic, because this is a constitution that was designed in order to prevent fascism to happen anymore. So there is too much democracy, and a law needs to pass 3-4 different times as many as needed in order to get final approval.
What about
and also the European Union, which is basically a bureaucratic institution, doesn't facilitate this reform process.
Are you worried about the effects of Brexit on Italy?
No, I'm not worried about Brexit, even though I believe it's a pity. It's a pity for UK. It's a pity for Europe. They really haven't been smart at all, both in planning and managing this situation. But I hope at least that this failure for Europe will help them learning the lesson and try to be a little bit politically smarter in the future in order to avoid that this happens again.
How do you take your coffee?
I espresso, straight espresso, pure, with no sugar, no milk.
That's Andrea Illy, the chairman of Illy Cafe, the coffee company. Thank you so much for coming in.
My pleasure indeed.